There am I in the midst. Once it is said in the human body, it is irrevocable. We who live in the body can profit from the experience and from the commitment. No one can give you vocalization. It's already inside of you. It's up to you to accept yourself. That is why it was said, when the eyes are single, one, two, eyes, plural, single, close, turn inward, this whole body is full of light, its atoms. You have to experience it. And the light is shining in the darkness of the skin. Like it or not, the experience is valid. And if you don't experience it, don't blame nobody. And if you're looking for somebody to give it to you, you're wasting your time. But let the light so shine before of men, not donkeys or birds, that they may see the good works. The time is for them to look for it and glorify the creative intelligence God inside of yourself. I love you. That's all I can do. The master is not above the student, but the student is not above the master. You master yourself. Nobody is your master, because God is the master, and God became you. You got to realize that. You don't become God, but you become God realized. When you want to accept it, that I can't force upon you. I can only remind you. That's why teachers come, like cosmic nursemaids. They just pull your head out of your ego and your emotional jungle and let you roar like a lion. You know, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Lion, get over your ego process. And that's what the whole process is all about. In simple language, you liberate yourself by accepting yourself. Free men are the lord of yourself. But don't try and think that you're running a race. This is a very individualistic process. Each one of you carry your own cross. You don't pick up his cross or my cross, you pick up your own cross. That's why Jesus said, in his own words, pick up your cross and follow me. Don't pick up mine. Because you pick up his, you deprive him of crucifixion. Pick up your own. That's your horoscope. The scope of your horoscope. And then you live it every day, and then nail it to your cross with your emotions. Your own cross, your own confrontations. It's right there, nowhere else. Not someplace out there. It's right here. But you can't see God, that's the problem. But you sure can hear him. Where are you, Daddy? In your big fat mouth, you. That's what I call the word, spoken word. In the beginning was the word. And the word was with God, creative intelligence. And the word was God. And the word was made flesh and dwells in man. You spend your whole life trying to describe that song with your mouth. Clop, clop, clop. There's a dollar sign right now. See? He's praising God too. A dog is man's best friend. Spread backwards, still a man's best friend. Faithful dog. God is more faithful than just spread backwards. It's all inside of you. But don't be afraid to face it. That's why your great teachers always tell you the journey is back and worked. How you put together, that's the journey. The memory bank of your cells, how you are put together. A sperm and an ovum. It looks like E.T. under a microscope. But that's fact. Losers can be born, so meet all the winners here. And even Brother Jesus took 9 months to come out, so no magic. We all come out 9 months. The idea is, the journey is very short, but it takes a great deal of patience to sit down and work your way back. You're working your way back through the memory banks of how you're put together atomically. So that you don't have no more doubts in your mind as to what you are and why you are. Not who you are. Because God became you, you can't become him. But what you are, you'll have all the evidence of it. And why you are. Then you can live this life without fear. You open your eyes and stand on 2 feet. I don't promise you anything other than to look at yourself and don't sell yourselves short. The caterpillar did it already. He became a butterfly. It's up to you to become immortal. If ever you want a guideline, because to the reality of yourself, think of the caterpillar. All he does is eat his way to butterflyhood. And therefore, each one in this room has the opportunity to arrive at their own immortality in the flesh. All the teachers can promise is, simply the statement is, to him that overcometh, I won't send forth a second time. But I'll make you a pillar in the house of the Lord. Permanent, guaranteed immortality. You can leave the body and it don't rot, or take with you and go through the wall. You have to go through the front door. That's what Brother Thomas and he saw Jesus. And he says, no, man, you're an apparition. And Jesus says, no, come feel it, make sure. No apparition. Tap that boy. Walk up to the wall. But he ain't got nowhere. Where can you go in this universal now? We live now, you see. Everybody's trying to live tomorrow. Look around. Isn't everybody living to die? Nobody's living to live. You program yourself to die. What more you want? Realizement came because they realized one thing. God became them. They don't become God. And therefore, when they realize that, they can only look at their brothers and sisters and say, wake up. But we'll hang around for a long time, but you all will wake up. That's all. But we can't do it for you. I can't drive for you, no matter how I try. I can teach you, give you the key, but you still gotta drive for yourself. So your mistakes or your frustrations are all valid. They're all essential thorns in the crown. Nails in the wrist. Lashes across the back. Those are all essential confrontations. To gain strength of mind. Strength of peace. So you can't envy nobody. Each one of you are unique. You have a beautiful personal autobiography of God realization to experience. So go to it. Every aspect of your life is an opportunity to realize your divinity. And there are only three ways to test you if you're there. One, to test your spirituality, not your churchianity, is how practical you are every moment of your life. If you're impractical, you're churchianistic. If you're practical, you're spiritual. Spiritual people are practical people. They don't perform impractical acts to make themselves martyrs. The churchianistic people can do that. That doesn't say they can't get blessings, but they will. But they can be carried away with fanatic action. The next test of a realized person is their divinity. It's not what you believe in or what church you belong to. It's how immune you are to illness and diseases around you. It's going to test your divinity. Evidence that you are identified with God, creative life. Teresa of Lourdes, or Bernadette of Lourdes, right? And they found out she had cancer. The Mother Superior, who was punishing her, giving her all kind of work to do. When they called the doctor one day because she fell over, and the doctor said this woman should have been dead 6 months ago. She had a large, big cancer, and the amount of pain she was enduring, he couldn't figure out how she never cried out. That's fantastic immunity. That the Mother Superior decided to be her own personal nursemaid. Realize people transcend their limitations of pain and anguish by raising their immunity to life itself. They live to live, not to die. That's why you find realized people are not people who know how to read and write as much. Usually they're turned off in their intellect and turned on in their emotions. Then, the liberated person. How do you know a liberated person? The one who can act and command performance. Anything he's doing or she is doing, the moment you ask them, they gotta believe it, they're good with it. They don't have attachments. Therefore, they're liberated. Because when you're sound asleep at night, do you know if you're a man or a woman? Think of it. When you're sound asleep at night, do you know if you're a man or a woman? Now you got no guarantee you're going to wake up tomorrow. So you're stuck. And you can have all kinds of illusions as to your divinity or your immortality and never look at the facts of what you actually are, what you can do with what you can. When you recognize what you are and then begin to apply what you have, then you're in the company of all the realized people. They call them saints, sane people. People who have realized what it's all about. Getting together in a group has a value. It tends to amplify and reinforce your personal awareness. And that's why the man Jesus advocated all the other great teachers. You know, they said, misery love company, happiness love company. So you can be greater liberated in a group than struggling by yourself in a corner and saying, why me, why me? And then you hear a voice in your head says, why not you? So then, if you meet another person who has the same desire to sit down and close their eyes, join them. You both will hear the same thing inside. These are my beloved children in whom I am well pleased. Enjoy yourselves. Because they'll come from inside your head. You are a creation. But a creation that was not asked to be created. And for that reason, the creation must be given individuality to argue with itself. Now if you were asked to be created, would you take a chance? Not knowing what the consequences can be? It's because of that we deny the opportunity to be asked. So we go to find out how it is to make mistakes and come back in order to experience compassion. Your child goes through that. He breaks your best treasured piece of china. And you like to smack his face in, but you're like, okay, I can always replace it. And forgive me. So that's why our great brothers say, Father, forgive them, they know not what they're doing.
The internal journey is the journey of how you're put together. And a lot of things have been written in agricultural language and has confused us for many centuries. But those few individuals who break through the language structure and get to the core of the knowledge of all realize one simple fact. That it's the journey of how you put together. And the result is a cellular transformation. You don't run from life or negate it. In fact, you live for life, moment to moment. That is why Jesus would say, the things I do, you do also. But not greater than me, right? Oh boy. Not greater than me makes him the only son of God. But if he says, and greater things shall you do, makes everybody child of God. So get up and do your thing. And to the greater glory of God. Because your chance is now. In the body. That's why he tells you already, my God is of the living, not of the dead. You're not going to find no God in the dead. I fall off the building, broke up my body and died many times. I didn't find nobody sitting in the throat. But I found this broken body with pain and ache. I woke up to realize, master this. The aches and the pains. Then the freedom is yours. And that's your greater glory of God. Greater things shall you do. So don't sell them short. Don't be the best thing like that. You know what? The designer, and the structure, and the owner and the occupant is the same person. His name is God. But he became you. And the you in you is this funny little voice that thinks it's separated from the body. So it carries on a two-way conversation with itself. You may call it conscience. Every night you lie down in your bed, before you fall asleep, you say to yourself, gotta go to sleep or wake up tomorrow. You talk to your conscience. You plug in your computer and tell it you gotta wake up tomorrow to go to work or do something. Do anybody tell themselves they're gonna go to bed and never wake up? See how you talk to yourself? Once you understand what you're doing, then you can laugh all day. That's what the whole thing is all about. Yeah. Happiness is love, not tomorrow. And it's nowhere to be found. So don't go looking for it. It's in the contents of your own mind. Whatever you program in there, that's what you got as happiness. And you empty it out, you still got the greatest happiness. The no mind. The Buddhists love to get them. It's like I take a blackboard, you wipe it clean. And I said, that's the best mind, blank. And blank only means you're at peace with yourself. And if you're at peace with yourself, with a blank mind, you don't dream. And you don't get nightmares. Well, watch out for nice aliens. They are there to you. But you gotta go past the nightmare. May you find a night stallion, then you can ride like a crusader and come back to life. Pick up your cross and follow the great man. That's the night stallion. Living life now. It's inside. And when you close your eyes, you're gonna see all kinds of geometry. And you're gonna try to describe it with letters of the alphabet. And you're gonna tabulate it with numerals till you get bored with it. Then you're gonna fall asleep and forget it all. And that might happen around 12 o'clock. And about 7 o'clock in the morning, you're waking up. Oh boy, that was a short sleep. You look at the clock, it's 7 hours gone. Where were you? So the wise man says, that's not so practical if you don't know where you are when you're sound asleep or who you are. So they spent all their lives finding out what they are or why they are. By becoming a witness, not an analyst. No amount of analyzing in your head is going to give you God realization. But if you watch, they call it Jehovah's Witness or God's Witness, you may see, and you may hear, and you may be transformed. As long as you watch. But the moment you analyze, then you block it. And for that reason, the greatest admonition is meekly wait and don't complain. Look inside. Then you'll see all the reasons for why you are where you are. But you have to be patient to see it. Now once you see it, and you recognize it, it's like a little kid found the cookie jar that mommy was hiding in the cupboard. All God's surprises are waiting for you. Yeah. Now you know what you and greater things shall you do. But it's there, inside of you. And age, education, has nothing to do with realization. Realization is the ability to watch without analyzing. When you open your eyes, you have the whole environment to analyze. And for that reason, God generated evolution, so you never run out of analysis. When you close your eyes, is supposed to watch and not analyze. And for that reason, he developed you out of involution. That's why it says, as above, so below, meaning as what we see, so it is what we don't see. On the visible range and on the invisible range. You are involved with the journey now of how to travel within the invisible ranges of the atomic structure. So, but the journey of inside is faster and shorter than the journey outside. The journey outside is designed to entertain you 22 hours a day. The journey inside is designed to entertain you for 2 hours and 40 minutes a day. They call it 1/10 portion. See, he gives you 24 hours to live. And he lets you breathe. It's called income breath. You got to give Mr. Reagan income tax. You got to give God income breath. Because he gave you outcome breath, you see. He blew into your nostril. When they cut the cord, we all know we can't breathe by our nostrils inside the womb. Modern scientific facts show you that. You have to cut the cord, and then you have to dilate and constrict by the pressure pushing in from outside, right there. It's back. And for that reason, we owe the creative presence, not some being on a throne, this principle, 1/10 portion of the 24 hours that the earth takes to turn on this axis, to involute within. Just as much the other 22 hours you could spend enjoying yourself outside. And realize people have all came to this in the end. So they call it meditation. Going back home. Returning back to the source of the core of their being. Now the Eastern people offer you withdrawal by closing the eyes. In the early stages and in the advanced stage, you have to open your eyes and function in the world in a state of indrawal. That's why they say don't be in the world. Don't be caught up in it. To be in the world but not in the world of it means to be in WORLD but not in WHIRL of it. So live in this world, don't run from it, not only planet Earth. The billions of pieces of real estate hanging around all over your head. I wish we don't throw no atom bomb to destroy it. But it's there and it's going to be there for a long time. But don't get caught up in it. Learn to indraw, but function. Now you only have one advantage out here. You have dominion, not franchise. So go forth, multiply, and have dominion over the universe. Don't go forth, multiply, and have franchises. God don't want competition. If you are his child, you are the natural inheritor, right? By virtue of last will and testament. So his will be done. And that means, like Brother Jesus says, greater things shall you do. Use it. Don't waste it. And don't try to own it. But use it. It's here to be used, everything. So, by living to live, your own internal happiness starts to flow out. And that's health, your internal happiness. Now, one time I was asked this question by a great man, his name was Yogananda. If you all are lying long dead, what would you want? More riches? More miracles? Or your breath back? Where are you going to go with riches if you're lying long dead? How many miracles can you perform after you're dead? But your breath back you wanted, because then you can perform miracles and take your riches after. You got your breath back. So that's what the whole thing is, breath. And for that reason, breath is referred to as health. And it's H-E-A-L-T-H. But if you put a hyphen between the H-E and the A-L, and another hyphen between the A-L and the T-H, you end up with he, all there is. God breathed into you. Now if you were to breathe into something, what would you do? Which one? You'd have to blow it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not he, you know. Mm-hmm. That because women will get to say, well, that should be a chauvinism. They don't mean male. If air projecting all this pressure, cosmic rhythms, cosmic vibration, is all there is. It becomes sonics. And then it becomes light. And then it becomes finally tissue. To talk to itself. Fantastic. That's why Jesus said, the only commandment he can give you is, love the Lord thy God with all of your mind, not part of your mind. So all of your mind is already here in the tissues, with all of your strength, vitality, with all of your heart, which can be inside, intimate, and all your soul. Then you can love your neighbor as yourself, because they got the same problem from them. It's individual. Every realized person from dawn of time, no matter who it is, tell us the same story over and over. Look inside. Because the body is the temple of the Creator. That's the house. And the Creator is the occupant. And the Creator is the designer. And the Creator is the owner. And the conversation that you're hearing coming out of my mouth is his way to talk to himself. But he performs this marvelous play of staying inside as the life itself and inducing the trickery of or illusion that you have an ego, that you're an individual. Till you find out you're no individual, you're sound asleep. Unified field. Einstein comes back. And relative field, wake up and look around. Science is saying the same thing. They didn't find a single thing different. Relativity and unified field. But it's in the human body, you have to come to grips with it, because that's the final test. That's the whole real purpose of it. The body. Enjoy it. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, many of us come into the body and never get shake up to the point of confrontation to understand what they have. And so they live incarnation after incarnation, coming to that confrontation. But at this moment in time, the ego is living with the confrontation of the understanding. And to make the breakthrough once and for all, to enjoy being in the body now. And not to negate it and look for another one. So as long as you can recognize and understand it in whatever form you are, be happy, because each one of us is like a spoke in a wheel, and God would like to have variety. He don't like similarities. Each one of us is a unique expression of His nature. So that's why American Indians refer to Him as Great Spirit. They don't give it a male or a female. But Jesus made it intimate by calling it Father. Simply because a human being has to go through the process of being a child relating to parents. So father, mother, like the Indians in India, they get that sense of intimacy. The parenting quality comes up. Those are valid conditions in the process. And if you run into an atheist, he's not an atheist because he's busy believing there's no God. So that makes him the greatest believer. See, to believe there is not, in order to think there is, you got to be a tremendous believer. So there are no atheists. It's just that some people can't handle the personal aspect, and therefore they want the impersonal. And some of us can cope with both personal and impersonal aspects of our nature. If you take some of the statements that have come down through the years by the realized ones, they tell you this. They have come that you may have life more abundantly. And it's a fact.
that once you set the attitude of acting to receive, and to allow things to flow through you, the law of abundance works. And if you want to be factual about it, let's take the word success. It's 7 letters, right? Now let's see if we can walk up this theory of success. The first letter is S. You're the sperm that got to the ovum, a winner. No loser can be born. That is abundant life, like it or not. Fact number one, not fiction. But you can make yourself a loser all your life with your mouth by telling yourself, you're this, and this, and this, and this, and this. You, universal, unlimited. That's the second step of the ladder. See, to see clearly, cosmically, collectively. The next C is ever new experience, ever new expression. You get bored if nothing changes. Like Volkswagen. They went out of business because they want to change the models. So we have to change. We continue to change. And that's why ever new, ever existing, ever expressing nature is in you already. No limitation. Then the next step up the ladder, after you realize that you're ever increasing, is service. You don't have any function greater than service. Because all business is service, all life is service. You look around, it's all service. And then the last step of the ladder is sharing. Because that's what it's all for. Selfless service. Sharing. So you have life abundantly, like it or not, factually locked up in you. They call it non-profit society. But that's the theory of success. So they all come to give you this understanding of life abundantly. And peace. The peace I give, the world doesn't give. Well, the world gives you 6 feet under the ground, and may you rest in peace with a piece of rock on top of it. When they bury you, that's what they say, rest in peace. 6 feet under the ground. But realize, people who realize what they give you, the strength of peace. The world gives you tranquility. May you rest in peace. Don't bother us. But the truly peaceful person has strength of peace, the ability to cope moment to moment without panic. So a peaceful person only follows one rule. Rule number one, don't panic.
Rule number two, don't panic. Rule number three, don't panic. He's got no other rule to follow. If you're so peaceful, he don't worry about nothing. He just lives and enjoys his life. And that's what they're telling you in simple language. And you find out the end result is healthiness, aliveness. And for that reason, everyone is endowed with the opportunity to perform the incredible. You don't know until you have to face it what is the incredible in you. When you face it and you express it, that's what you came for. So give yourself enough time. Now don't worry if your neighbor curse you or hate you. You know why? They die first. Because they swallow their own saliva and the enzymes poison them. They don't aggravate you anyhow. So call me a son of a bitch. It don't bother me. Because you don't swallow your saliva. And that's what Jesus said. It's not what you put in your mouth that's going to defile you. It's what you say that's going to defile you. The enzymes in your saliva will kill you. So quit calling your neighbor names. And enjoy calling yourself something nice. I love you. Because if you start calling the other joker some label, you get sick first. You gotta swallow all that saliva, it's gonna give you all kind of ulcers and cancer in your stomach. Oh boy. Guilty. But I suffer too, see? That's how I know. You swallow your own enzymes and they kill you faster than your neighbor wouldn't worry about it. Say, well, don't worry about anybody putting hexes on you. Be a mirror. Because why? You look in the mirror, you only see yourself. So anybody call you or they want to put a hex on you, I'm a mirror, man. The hex is back on you, not me. So you don't have anything to fear in the world. You'll live to express the divine love. You are unique. What's so unique is that this trip around way in this room. There's a friend of mine, the first time I met him years ago, his name is Sankesh Vadas. He walks in the house and he sees me and he says, "Hi, brother of 150,000 incarnations, what are you doing here?" And everybody, "Oh my God." He said, "Yeah, I know this joker." He starts giving me a life reading of the pattern. So that's the whole idea, you never know who you're going to meet. <All right. laughs> Well, life is too short when you think of it. The speed of light is 186,000 miles a second. I'm not talking about this. The energy, just the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second. Planet Earth is only 8,000 miles in diameter. The speed of light go across the Earth from one end to the other. You bombard a human being 23 times. 3 seconds. Where can that person go? That he's not going to get all your thought waves going and bombarding. Mr. Gandhi, wherever he is, he hears my voice 23 times a second. He likes it or not, he's picking up my thoughts and I'm picking up his. But my individuality of my ego can insulate me from the unified field. That can be my hang-up, that I would want to call myself a Dano or call him Gandhi. But in the unified field, we're the same. Now comes the rub. It's at the unified field. If you live minimum 100 years each incarnation, and you take one revolution of the earth around the sun to represent a year, that's 100 revolutions. And you take that distance and stretch it out and divide it into 186,000 miles a second, you know how many incarnations you got? You'd be surprised how long you'd have to live to work on just the speed of light, not even the energy. You ain't got the slightest notion of how much energy waiting for you to use. The scientists are looking at this staggering figure today and saying to themselves, oh my God, you mean to tell me you're going to be here a million lives to use up one little beam of light? I said, yeah, buddy. So then he told me 150 million thousand incarnations. Well, you're a long way. So many of us have been bumping into each other for many times. And if you think this is your first and last time that you've been here, well then you don't have any right to be a poor person. Because your first and last time. And you don't have no right to feel if you take what you want and they challenge you. Nothing to be afraid of it because your first and last time. Because there's nobody to come for anything. It is your first and last time. But if it's not your first and last time, then it's a different story. See? The logic of it and the facts of it. If the logic can't match the facts, then you have no true understanding of what you are. But if the logic will match the facts, then you have a true understanding that this couldn't be the first and last time. For example, the blind man that was brought to Jesus to be healed. The people want to see if they can trap him, you know, and say, Master, who sinned that this man be born blind? The man sinned that he born blind, or his parents sinned that he born blind? Neither. If he says, yes, the man sinned that he born blind, then that proves he lived before to do it. If he said the parents did, that's heredity. They deserve it because they must have done something wrong to get a child like that. But then he said neither. Which means that he didn't say that these two conditions were not valid. Is what the next statement would provide, but neither as an answer. He says, neither. This is to the glory of God. In other words, don't sell yourself short because you might have done something wrong, or your parents might have done something wrong. You still have the option to rise above your limitations here and now, if you make the effort to accept yourself as the creative process, not as the creator, but as the process of the creator in his own creation. If you accept that, then you can rise above the limitation. You can rise above the fixations of past or hereditary into that state of divine oneness. Your divine oneness is a reality. It's not an imagination. But you have to understand it, recognize it, and apply it. Free man all, Lord of yourself. Not SELF. Lord of your CELL. Cosmic motor battery. Seven cell battery, nine cell battery, eight cell battery. This is how many cells? Billions, fantastic piece of machinery, but it's
greater consciousness.
Here's a good example of yourselves. You ever cut your hand or your lip with a envelope? Isn't that kind of odd? Piece of paper should cut your lip. It hurts, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And after a while it seals itself up back. You ever ask it, hey, how you do that? Who are you in there that's doing it? Now those are good confrontations with your true self. And get it to talk to you. Because it's God, as the creative consciousness locked up in it. And your ego is the part that recognizes it got cut by a piece of paper made in the form of an envelope. And then you can argue about the paper being a tree. And a tree being a seed. And you can keep arguing that the seed is an atom and all different things. You come right back to what? Who cut who? You see, full circle. Huh? Who cut who in this cell structure? And then you laugh all day because you're pulling off the entire masks. But it's your own self-discovery. Thank you.
Should we have a break before we ask questions? I think that would be good. Anyone have any questions for Dono tonight? I'm sure you do. Maybe not formulated, but they're there.
Yes.
Hello. What about killing bugs? I've been feeling bad about all the bugs I've been killing, but I don't know any other way thing to do.
Yes, no, maybe. Yes, no, maybe. See, Moses took it out of the desert to harass the Pharaoh and forgot to send them back. So by virtue of that, yes, yeah, smack him in the head. They don't have a right to be in your house. No, if they're outside in the yard, they're entitled to that. And maybe if you use some citrus oil around the house, they wouldn't come in your house.
Citrus oil?
But you see, blame it on Moses. So anytime you want to bargain with them, says, now, Brother Moses, you brought these jokers out to their own natural habitat to harass human beings. Take them back or I'm going to smack them and send them out to high evolution. And the high evolution is that they should be honeybees to produce more honey. So that's what you do when you smack them. Be a honeybee. Those who know me, that's what I do in my clinic. See, that's why all three answers are valid. But you must know the facts first, then you can apply the remedy.
I said, it looks like we want to be spoon-fed, no questions.
Yes?
Would you discuss basically the spiritual insights and lessons to be learned on the inner level by living in a desert environment such as this one.
The reason ancient people went away to the desert or into the mountains and caves, it was to duplicate the womb where the ovum and the sperm bonded to form a human being. And in that matrix, life and all its intricacies are organized. So when we go back through our memory banks by looking inward, and if we go to an area where the environment is similar, we can speed up the process and acquire the strength of peace, not the tranquility of peace. Most people are looking for the tranquility of peace, thinking that is what it's involved. So they sit down and look like this all day, spending their time doing like that. But that's not the realization. The realization is to get up on your 2 feet and function in the world with your fellow man in a state of peace. This is the strength of peace. Understanding how you put together from within yourself, and there is nothing there to panic about. So from then on, the desert, the cave, or the modern condominium is just as valid a place where you can adjust the temperature and make it to Siberia or Tucson. And therefore you have this adaptability to yourself in the waking state, the moving state, living in the world, not afraid of it. But you come into this area, it has tremendous contribution of helping you to look at yourself more from within.
On reincarnation, you understand the Bible pretty well. The verse that says, given a man wants to live and wants to die, and then comes the judgment. Why does that seem to contradict reincarnation?
Who said it? That's more important. Who said those words?
Not Jesus.
Good. Then you got my answer, because he will tell you this. There is no man born of woman greater than John, who is Elijah that has come. Now, what is he saying? Reincarnation or no reincarnation? But he said those words himself, and I'm going to hold it to those words, because he lived and said them, and he was a realized man, because he allowed them to nail him on a cross to show he was realized. The other one didn't go the full road for me to validate, but I'm going to take this fellow's word and go with him all the way to the end of it, because I know he will validate it. There is no man born of woman greater than John, who is Elijah that has come. And that is written and said. You can find it in the Testament by the living teacher. And for that reason, you have to take the living teacher as a testimony to validate his own statement and live up to his own contract. When you pursue the path of realization, it is easy to get locked into a lot of statements by various people. But they may not want to account for what they say when the time comes to account. But when you see a human being who is going to go the full run of the suffering and take upon himself for you to benefit, then that's tremendous obligation, because he even went one step further. none come unto the Father but by me. Suffer it to be so, for this is the way of righteousness. I don't care where you go, you ain't getting into God if you don't go by way of a human being and put up with this fact that a human being is going to be your credit card. And that's what he's really saying, and you can put him to the test, because if I lend you my credit card, I have to back it up even if you squander it, because I made this, the gesture. And he has made the cosmic gesture of making himself the bridge between your ego and the creative intelligence, and would assume the responsibility of resolving it. For that reason, that is a more valid science, and the realities involved in it. So it would be preposterous to say that this is the first and last time a person can live. In the first place, where would you take him to create him? And where would you put him to create him? And what you want to create him for? If it's the first and last time.
Realization.
Realization of what?
His own weakness, lackness.
And if you make a mistake in school, they pass you?
No, you have to learn school.
Oh, then that's reincarnation too. If you can't do it in school, how are you going to do it in life? See? There's no way. The early writers tried to cut out at the Nicene Council a lot of the documentation of reference to past life for one reason. If you hung up yourself too much in the past life, the new religion wouldn't get a chance to grow, and the conversion wouldn't speed up. And that's the reason why they tried to cut out all the ideas pertaining to past life. But they couldn't cut out what the man said himself and committed himself to say. And they had to stay with it. For that reason, if you look at your Christian Bible, look for the one that has all his words written in red. Buy that book and take his words as the cosmic invoice for your liberation. I do.
You don't feel that those words down through the ages have been mistranslated and
censored? No, not when a master speaks, you can't mistranslate his words. His words are very straight and plain.
So you, think the you don't think the church manipulated them?
No, not that way. No. The rest could be, but not the words they actually say. I'll give you an example why they can't monkey with it. He's dying on the cross. And there are two people dying with him, right? And they call them thieves. They are crucified by the Roman government, a type of punishment not demonstrated to an ordinary thief. You don't crucify a thief. You cut off his hand and send him back into the community. But if you nail him on a cross or tie him to a cross and beat him till his bones break up, you're using a specific type of punishment for a specific type of thief. Those thieves were guerrillas against the Roman government. And in the time of Spartacus, who revolted against the Roman government, Julius Caesar passed that judgment on them to make them an example throughout time. Whenever you catch somebody fighting the Roman government, that's the way you treat them. Now, when Jesus was crucified, he was nailed. He wasn't tied, as was commonly done to every human being. Yet, the two thieves are arguing. One is saying to Jesus, if you're so great, why don't you come down? After this cross, you have so many people, the hell are you going to die up here? Then the second thief says, hey man, you don't have a right to criticize this guy. He ain't even done nothing. Then he turns to Jesus, and these are his words. Master, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. Now, if the man on the cross is not the master,
How the heck is a thief going to know that? Where is he going to learn from? And why would he confront him under such circumstances? Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. Which kingdom has he got? They never met until now on the cross. Does a thief like that suddenly look at a man being nailed to the cross and give him authority over his life like that? Common sense, now. You don't even know somebody being nailed next to you, you're dying. You can turn to him and say, hey, you remember me? But it's the answer that Jesus gives that tells you there's a vast science underlying the confrontation. Verily, verily, no one uses those words unless they're going to be responsible for what they say. Which means, verily means in truth, right down to the most tiny particle of matter. I'm going to be responsible for what I'm saying. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he didn't say to the other guy, you and I, nobody down there, just you and I, will be in paradise today. He is making a definite contribution to that man's life, to take him to a certain dimension of existence. And those who read it, they think paradise is some little place in the sky. Paradise is not a place in the sky. Paradise is a state of being. It means beyond desire. At this moment, today, in time, I and you, friend, are going to be in the atomic level beyond where desire controls life. And I vouch for you in your body that you will have it. And I remember you from where? Past or present or future? And why are you asking me if I remember you, if we didn't meet before? And the man is classified as a thief. That means that teacher also had some karmic debt to fulfill by performing some act of taking something that don't belong to him. And where did it happen? It happened in a past life. Because when he came to the River Jordan, he said to the man John, right in front of everybody, there is no man born of woman greater than John, who is Elijah that has come. He knew that that man was Elijah. And Elijah knew that that man that accosted him was his own student, Elias. And if you read the life of Elijah and Elias, you will see, without any doubt, where one guy took what didn't belong to him. The student asked his teacher in that incarnation, why don't you give me a double portion of your power? And the teacher made a remark, you ask a hard thing. Suffer it to be so. If you see me before I go, it's yours. For those who don't know the relationship between a master and a disciple would not comprehend what that subtle argument was all about. But a student doesn't have the right to ask his master for God realization
unless he's capable to pay the price for the God realization. And the teacher put him to the test by telling him, if you see me before I go, it's yours. You don't know when I'm going to leave this body, and you better be awake 24 hours a day, because I'm going to slip out of my body and leave you whole in the bag. And you better be ready to get your God realization, because I ain't going to leave you with nothing till you do it. You don't know what you're asking for. But the same token, you don't know, there may be somebody in this group that I'm teaching far more developed than you. And in your rambunctiousness and aggressiveness to ask me for this particular quality is denying that person's right to inherit it, because the teacher has the right to give it to the student, not the student to ask the teacher for it. But the student knows a certain law that gives him the right. And the teacher knows a certain law that makes him have the right to give. So he's going to put him to the test just as much as he's going to bargain for the power. One of those disciples of Elijah was far more advanced than the student Elias, who became Jesus, and Elijah that became John, the work of the same karma. That student had to come back because he was deprived of the spiritual transition. And the one who witnessed this rambunctious act had to come back to remind that student that he took something that didn't belong to him. So the role of Jesus and the thief on the cross and Judas is no joke. He took what didn't belong to him from Judas. That's why Judas sold him down the road. And then Judas hung himself in front of everybody to let them see that what he was doing. But that said, when he committed suicide by hanging himself, his body burst asunder. But it didn't burst asunder until Jesus on the cross made the statement, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Until he said to the thief on the cross, on this day you and I will be in paradise. He paid back his debt to the thief, who was a gorilla in that present incarnation, who was deprived in a past incarnation from having the realization by being a witness, and by Judas, who was the actual person that should have inherited the power from Elijah. He had to make restitution to them. Every guru, if he doesn't get the transition of power by virtue of love from the other guru, and if he forced the issue by his intensity to bargain, he must also be prepared to go through the trial to see if he's worthy. And therefore he went through the trial to see if he's worthy. And because he did pass the test, when he came back, the roles were reversed. The man, John, declared openly before, I baptized by water. But there cometh one who shows I'm not worthy to unlatch. He baptized by the Spirit. Meaning the roles are reversed. He has come down from the high level of a guru to the low level of a student, and will pay homage to the one who must assume the role and act now as the liberator or cosmic nursemaid for everybody in his time lapse. But if that student don't come and recognize him, he'd be wasting his time there by the River Jordan. So the student had to come and recognize him and declare it. Then the argument begins like this. There is no man born of woman greater than John, who is Elijah that has come. Baptize me. And the other guy says, no, you baptize me. And the other guy says, no, you baptize me. Now picture two big grown-up guys arguing who should throw water in each other's head. Makes any sense? Well, when you understand the laws of initiation between a master and a disciple, a lot more is going on because of unfulfilled commitments and obligations that involve life in different life forms. And so
He said, suffer to be so. Then John took the water, threw it on the head of Jesus, and it was John who saw within his own convex vision, which you may classify as third eye vision, convex vision is a scientific term, the ability to see truth. Concave vision is only the ability to see at. Right, doctor? You see, that's the thing we try to develop. Convex vision, like that glass, if you see right through it. So, it was John who saw the energy being transferred now to Jesus, and it was John who heard the creative intelligence saying with him, his own consciousness, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. Meaning, John is happy now, totally without any mental reservation, to turn loose the power fully into the man Jesus to go pick up the role and lift up the world as the ascended master or Messiah, one who lifts up in the body. And Jesus went away into the desert to test the power that he got. And there are only three tests every human being has to face from the day they're born to the day they phase out. Test number one, food. You will kill for food, but you may not realize it. Test number two, bad self-image. You may commit suicide. Test number three, you like to own everything, but you can't take it with you when you're sound asleep. But all three answers for all three tests were valid to show that he had the right understanding. And test number one, involving food, when he was asked by his ego, change this stone into bread, the creative intelligence answers back the ego intelligence, man, manifestation, not only this man, manifestation, does not live or exist by bread alone, indirect forms of energy, the 144 elements that surround us, but by every word, the cosmic vibration or sonics that proceeds out of the mouth of God that enters the human mechanism via the medulla oblongata. There we live without eating, and we can do it. And anyone who has realized himself has done it. There's enough case histories to validate that. The next test is, if you throw yourself off this mountain, your Father in heaven will send angels to catch you lest you hurt your feet. As a boy growing up, I used to figure myself as a fire catcher that meant, come on, Jesus, jump. But then you realize, like everything else, that's all self-image you're working with. But he gives an answer. Tell us, thou shalt not tempt the Lord, which means we don't have a right to kill ourselves because we don't create life. We don't give ourselves life. Life is given to us as a gift. When the cord is cut, we are pressurized from outside. And if we hold the pressurization in synchronous rhythm, we stay in the body to perform. That's why I don't look a gift horse in his mouth. You surprise yourself. But that's the gift of life. And that's why we should not commit suicide. Then the third test, if you think that you have all the money in the world and all the possessions, you'll be the greatest individual, you'll find out you got to sleep at night. So he says, get thee behind me, Satan. In other words, there's no way you can own anything. It's not valid. You have to sleep. You have to breathe. These are valid laws. They make you realize that possession or attachment to possession doesn't give freedom. And then he knew he was totally in command of his creative consciousness. He came down from the mountain
and he went to a wedding. That's what's interesting. After fasting and denying himself and rebuking his self-image, he went to a wedding. And it's the comedy, the conversation at the wedding, that tells you how he knew himself, if he had the power. He walked into this wedding, and his mother came up to him and said, "Son, there is no wine." And his remark was, "Woman, my time has not yet come." Which tells us right away that nobody does anything. And when they do it, it's already set up to be done at the right time. And if you take any credit for it, you're fooling yourself. You live cosmic time and get the credit for seeing it happen around you by others, and you believe you are making it happen. But then his mother turned to his servants and said, "Do what he tells you." She knew he was working with time. She knew he had a creative understanding and would not apply it before the right time. As you walk away. Then he said to the servants, "Take the jug, throw it with water, and go get the guy up there." And when the guy got the wine and tasted it, it was better than the wine he was serving. Because at a wedding, he always gives the good wine first and the lousy one last. Well, here he's telling him, "You gave us the lousy wine first and then you're giving the good wine last." See? There is where creative power comes now. The right time. But then the real challenge is he a manipulator of creative consciousness? Is he making a profession of it? Is he going out and applying it as a way of life? And we see he doesn't do any such thing. He doesn't go up to anybody and tell them he's going to heal them or do any favor for them. People come to him and ask. And then he tests them in their conviction, knowing that they have to go through the time lapse of waiting for it to happen. And when he makes a statement, it is well synchronized for it to happen. No realized person does any miracle. Yeah.
Could you repeat that last part again that you just said about starting with he doesn't go to ask anybody to help them and wait.
Until they ask.
About test them in their convictions?
Yes.
Would you repeat that again?
He doesn't go and ask them for anything. He waits for them to come and ask. And he tests them in their conviction by letting them ask. Are they really convinced that he can do anything? Otherwise they wouldn't come and ask. So doesn't he, every time they ask him for something or do something that is outstanding, he says, "What, your faith or your conviction made you well. I didn't heal you. You heal yourself. If you didn't heal yourself, how would he do it?" And she's saying to herself, "If I but touch the hem of his garment, I would be well." Who needs to be well? The man Jesus who wears the garment, or the woman who's going to touch it needs to be well? Who's got the need? Mm-hmm. So she's doing what? Setting the sub-statement, or you want to call it self-hypnosis, or placebo effect, call it what you like. She's still got to set up the programming for the brain to interact to the reality of the unified field. She's already accepting him as existing in the unified field from her relative standpoint. And she goes and touched just the garment. And if it was just imagination, why would a guy among everybody make such a statement, someone touch me. I don't blame his disciples who follow the master. Everybody's touching what you want. Everybody's pushing against you. Imagine a crowd of people trying to push. And he says, somebody's touched me. If we're not dealing with atomic physics. And he turns around and identifies the woman. That's what makes us know. He knows what he's doing from the atomic level. He said, your faith has made thee whole. Your conviction of your internal comprehension, though it may not be in the terms of scientific terminology, but it was sufficient to set up the synchronous reaction between the unified field and the relative field of your level of understanding with my level of integration. Go. Enjoy it. And a lot of people who he helped, you know, he told some of them, go tell nobody. Go show yourself to somebody. And what did all these people do? Good. So let people enjoy their sickness. Don't always take it away. Sometimes they gotta wait till they're ready to give it up. And when they give it up, then they're cured. So this is how most of these realized men work. They don't cure nobody. But they get the credit when it happens because it's synchronized so exact to happen at that instant.
What about raising Lazarus? That sounds like a pretty big cure to me.
In your biblical writing, there were two Lazaruses, you know. A rich Lazarus and a poor Lazarus full of sores. The one that was raised from the dead wasn't the one full of sores. The one that was raised from the dead was a rich Lazarus. That Lazarus was the guy who came and asked him, what should a rich man do to enter the kingdom of heaven? And he said, go sell everything and follow me. But when you're rich, you can't sell everything to follow a belief system. So he made a remark. It's easier for the camel to go through the needle eye than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. But nevertheless, he stayed at that rich man's house because he accepted that man's wish to realize himself. But he knew that that man could not break his attachment to his belt. So he's going to help him now as a realized teacher, helping the student. See, Jesus had many students of all levels of society. The married, the single, the rich and the poor, the sick and the dead. So this one was a rich one. He stayed there, but he knew he wasn't getting anywhere to mold that consciousness. So he decided to walk away from the house. And as he left the house, they said Lazarus got sick with a strange sickness. This is the role of the teacher, to help the student to break his attachment. What is the greatest threat to a rich man? No. Last of his life. You can always make more money if you lose his money. As long as you got life. If you ain't got no life, you can't make nothing. So this is the only way you're gonna make him come to grips with the reality. Go sell everything and follow me. In other words, you gotta disengage. But he can't disengage if he's alive. So a strange sickness came. He's a teacher. He's going to work on that fellow's consciousness. And as he walked away from the house, the life creative process started to diminish and the breakdown process started to speed up. In medicine, they call it anabolic, catabolic, right? He speeded up the catabolic rate in the student to make the student come to grips with the reality of his attachment. since he can't literally give up the possession, he's going to learn to give up no help by confronting the rhythms of his own metabolism. So as the further he walks from the house, the more the catabolic rate speeds up and the more the anabolic rate goes down. Catabolic means the breakdown rate, anabolic means the build-up rate. Then the sisters sent message, their brother is sick. Did the teacher pay any attention? No, he didn't even go back. He kept walking further still. And then they sent message, I'm really sick. And he kept going further. And this time the message is, he's dead. Well, picture yourself, you're the sister of the man, and this guy stayed at your house, and you treat him so nice, and you knew what he can do, and you send message, and he don't come and help you, brother. Would you like to give him a piece of your mind if you saw him? I sure would. And those two sisters wanted to give that guy a piece of his mind, of their mind. But when he got the message that the brother was dead, he made a statement that tells you only people who do the study of the science of realization understand the statement. This is not a debt unto the debt. What kind of statement is that? It takes modern science to find out now there are two kinds of debt, clinical debt and terminal debt. And yet, way back in that time, he's already defining clinical debt from terminal debt. This is not a debt unto the debt. This is a clinical debt that I induced as a master or a student to show him that possession doesn't give realization, but compassion gives realization. But I'm going to show him more compassion now. I'll walk back. See, he walks back and see these two sisters coming along, wanted to give the teacher a piece of their mind, but and this is how they approach it. Master, if you were here, our brother would be faring like this. And the 40 baloney statement, you can read right through it. But nobody could read it that way because they didn't see it that way. Yep, that's what they wanted to tell him. He says, where is the body? But Master, he's been dead, he stink. Yeah, tell me more. He don't know what the whole thing is because he is the master of that student. And he's putting that student to the test of total detachment from life and possession. And when I took him to the place where he was buried, this is what Jesus said. Lazarus, come forth. Picture for one moment Lazarus lying down in that coffin and saying, I ain't got enough of you, man. I'm enjoying this. But he had to get up. And then it's why we realize that there's a master-disciple relationship going on between him and Lazarus. It's when he said, Father, I did not have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around me. They wouldn't comprehend disciple-master relationship at the subtle unified field, in the relative connective atomic field. But I'm putting on this show. Those at that time may not comprehend it. We today who've lived over 1900 years with all kind of notions of what it represents is now getting the true understanding what went on for the first time between two great human beings and what does go on between you and the creative intelligence at the connective level of yourself. So Lazarus come forth. Lazarus came out. That kind of love and commitment exists between the master and the disciple. But the master is not above the disciple, nor the disciple is not above the master. It is enough that they be friends. That is what is important about the relationship. because thou shalt have no other gods before me. Me is the me god in you. And if you don't worship the me god in you, you have false images. So when Saint Teresa and Saint Catherine, especially Saint Catherine, and she wanted to see God, Jesus appeared to her. When she said to Jesus, I want to see God, he disappeared from her head and in the room. And you know what she saw? Herself looking back at herself. She said, no, I don't want this. Give me back my Jesus. She couldn't take her own self, her own me godness, because the me godness is everything. It becomes you. But when we are in that state, we are made humble from the fact that it is a human being who brought us to realize that God is us. And that human being gives us a sense of humility. And out of respect, we would want to see the person who triggers us into the realization. You would want to know that your diploma or whatever school you came from would state the name of the school in order to give you some kind of credence. So the same way with Jesus, I was baptized by John the Baptist. See? And Catherine, I was initiated by Jesus to see the God in myself. And we all have to go through it. So suffer it to be so, for this is the way of righteousness. In other words, no matter how far we go into our own God-realization, lives of great men will always remind us we should make our own lives sublime, going on ahead of us, leaving footprints in the sands of time. Walk behind, appreciating that they've gone ahead of you. But their journey ain't any different than your journey. Is that how you cope with it is all the difference. Because you got to go through the same process and you have to cope with it. So when you get in your car and drive it, I'm not driving for you. You're bucking the traffic with every car that comes in front of you. And you'll notice no two times you drive your car, you have the same type of traffic to confront. It is always different. And that's the journey. So, initiation and the things that Jesus spoke of and reference to his own disciples were all valid. That's why we have to take the statements he made and look at it more objectively in terms of our connectedness with it.
Thank you, Don.
You're welcome. I think the cat is asking a question.